This message comes from NPR sponsor Rosetta Stone, an expert in language learning for 30 years. Right now, NPR listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership to 25 different languages for 50% off. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
Welcome to The Limits. I'm Jay Williams.
Do you agree with this book that is being taught with kids that babies are racist?
Senator.
You just heard that sigh. The sigh heard around the country during the confirmation hearings of Supreme Court nominee Ketanji Brown Jackson. That moment went viral and was felt so deeply by so many, especially black women. Not just because of the question from Senator Ted Cruz, which was a dumb one, by the way, but for the strained expression on Judge Jackson's face as she took a silent pause. It was the pause of someone who decided to choose poise over Will Smith chaos. She was being challenged yet again about her right to certain spaces, to changing the game, and to breaking barriers. My guest today knows a lot about being the first to do something, but she also knows she wouldn't have had that same grace in front of Ted Cruz.
I'm constitutionally incapable of being talked down to.
That is my homie, Michelle Roberts, former lawyer and executive director of the National Basketball Players Association, the Union for NBA Players. You see, she's the first woman to hold that position in the history of the league. And she's the first woman to lead a major sports union in North America. She did that by gaining trust from the players, by showing up for them time after time. Michelle put their safety first during the pandemic and helped mastermind the NBA bubble to continue the season. But her most memorable accomplishment was when she helped them use that bubble as a platform for social justice in the wake of George Floyd and police brutality protests.
The Milwaukee Bucks have decided to boycott Game 5. You see the tweet right there.
When do we want it? When do we want it?
And the players carried protest messages on their jerseys.
Don't shoot! Don't shoot!
Today on the show, I get a chance to talk to Michelle about how she went from corporate law to the NBA, the stereotype she faced as a black woman along the way, and her two cents on my sport, college basketball. She's tough, she's honest, and wait for this, she hates the school I play basketball at, Duke. Here's my conversation with the Michelle Roberts. Hi, Michelle.
Mr. Williams, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. So can we kick things off and can we just dive a little bit into the fact that you don't like my school, nor do you like players from my school? I think that's a great opening subject matter.
No, it's so unfair of you to say that I simply don't like them. I hate them. And let's be clear, I don't hate the players. I hate Duke. And because you happen to play for Duke, I therefore hate the team. But it's the kind of hatred that you relish in, because you know, you only hate the people that on some level you admire. And the Duke college program, basketball program at least, has been extraordinary. And so every time they beat a team that I'm supporting, it saddens me. And of course, I'm really sad right now since Duke has made it once again into the Final Four. But no, I don't dislike Duke. I hate Duke.
Great. I'm glad we can find some connectivity at the beginning of this conversation. I'm so curious, from somebody who ran the Players Association for as long as you did, just on the subject matter of college basketball, what are your thoughts around name, image, and likeness for college athletes and just the NCAA as an institution in general?
Yeah, you know, I'm not as big a college basketball fan as I've historically been a professional basketball fan. And frankly, part of the reason has been that as much as I have enjoyed watching college basketball over the years, I've never stopped being bothered by the revenue that's been generated by the schools and not shared in a more meaningful way with the players. And so there's always been a little bit of a resentment towards college basketball. And not so much that it doesn't pay the players money, but it just struck me as really sort of mean-spirited not to allow these men and women to enjoy some revenue generated from their intellectual property. Again, I understand the whole notion of getting a free education and all of that, but you know, we're talking a lot of money that these schools are making. And look, I'm a capitalist. I don't have any problem with making money and generating revenue. But it always bothered me, not just a little bit, but quite a bit, that these kids were not able to generate some revenue. And I knew this day would come. I'm sad it took so long, but I'm delighted that it's here.
Michelle, I want to talk about some other news for a quick second. I can't help but draw the comparison between you and Ketanji Brown Jackson. Mm. She's the first woman to ever be nominated for the Supreme Court, and the hearing last week was so intense that, first off, did you watch it? And if you did, what were your takeaways?
I couldn't not have not watched it, of course. I did watch just about every second of it. I wasn't surprised at some of the vitriol that some of the senators dared aim at her, frankly. And I'll say this, you know, the Democrats can behave like children too. But I wasn't surprised at some of the nonsense that she had to contend with. I got to tell you, I could not have been prouder at her ability to not cuss him out. See, there's a reason. I will never, ever, I don't want to, but there's a reason I would never, ever be a judge, a federal judge, let alone a Supreme Court justice nominee, because I know that I am constitutionally incapable of being talked down to.
I'm curious, as you are watching her, Michelle, you know, there are moments in my life where I watch somebody that is breaking barriers or doing something that's unprecedented, and you almost become in awe of the poise in which they address certain. Was there one particular issue or incident in particular that you said, wow, the way you handled that just goes to speak about where you are and about where our country is trying to go?
There was a point where she just stopped talking. She sighed and she didn't say anything for probably no more than 8 to 10 seconds. And of course, being the fool that I am, I said, get him, girl, meaning cuss him out, because it was such a stupid, insulting question. But instead, she took a pause, and she was clearly collecting herself, and then she gave an eloquent answer.
I do not believe that any child should be made to feel as though they are racist, or though they are not valued, or though they are less than.
Many of us would have forgiven her had she called this fool a fool, but she didn't.
Mm-hmm. As you were watching, as a Black woman, what does it mean to you to have somebody that looks like you sitting in the highest chair in the highest court in America?
She shares a birthday with me. She doesn't know this, of course, because I barely know her. I mean, we've met once or twice. But she and I share a birthday. I'm considerably older, a couple of weeks older than she is. But the one thing, and I tell people this all the time, I'm an attorney. I had not met a Black woman lawyer until my second year of law school. And when I did, it was as if I'd met a rock star. Because even though I believed I could be a lawyer, I'd never seen one. I'd never met one that looked like me.
You know, Michelle, I can't help but wonder how much you know you are a motivation for young Black women out there. You were the first Black woman and the first woman to ever head up a sports union. I'm so curious to hear from you what types of stereotypes or biases you witnessed while you were blazing that incredible path.
You know, the good news is I was not, and I don't think I could have been, or perhaps should have been, at like 30 applying for that position. Because at a certain point, both women, certainly African-American women, certainly African-Americans, have got to become comfortable understanding that they're going to be people who are out to get you, right? Either to destroy you on the one extreme, or simply humiliate and insult you, or disrespect you, right? I mean, that is the unfortunate reality, certainly for being a Black woman in business, because there are lots of people that just don't think you have any right to be in the room. Mm-hmm. Now, it took me a long time. I'd like to think that it took me less time than perhaps others, but it took me a long time to finally not want to run into the ladies' room and cry in the sink. So I say all that to say that I had taken my lumps, and I learned how to protect myself and grow that thick skin, and then equally importantly, learned how to check people.
What were some of those techniques that you learned to protect yourself?
First off, you never let them see you cry, right? I remember when I was a trial lawyer, There was a woman who was gotten yelled at by a judge. I was her supervisor, and she asked for a recess. And then before the judge granted the recess, she was openly weeping. And I knew that she was hurt. But I spent the first few minutes telling her that I was principally concerned about her inability to hold on until she can get out of that courtroom. Don't you let that son of a bitch see you cry. Because, frankly, that emboldens people. So, I mean, I walk into courtrooms and people would ask me, is your lawyer here yet? I would actually be approaching counsel table when my case was called, and the clerk, or sometimes the judges say, ma'am, take your seat in the courtroom. And I'd say, Your Honor, I'm Michelle Robinson, counsel for. I've had meetings where this is pre-internet, right? Show you how old I am. I'd have meetings, I'd walk into a conference room and people would do a double take and they said, Missa, you lost, because they didn't have internet and didn't have an opportunity to check me out and figure out that, oh, there's a black woman. I've been in meetings, and every woman can attest to this, black or white, where I've said something and, you know, radio silence, 5-10 minutes later, a man says, that's a great idea. All right. The best news about being underestimated is that your competition underestimates you and your ability to, frankly, kick his ass. And I've had lovely, lovely moments when I walked into a courtroom, no one knew me, and when I opened my mouth or gave an opening statement or cross-examined a witness, and they suddenly, you could see that they were saying, uh-oh, because they didn't think that there was any formidable opponent that they had to prepare for. I just stopped caring about what they did and did my job and made myself be the best lawyer in that courtroom. As I got older and people got to know me, I couldn't get away with some of that stuff anymore. But but that's fine.
Because you made a huge name for yourself.
That's fine, because then that's all I want. All I want is to be treated with respect and have my professionalism be honored. And so if now people say, oh, Michelle Roberts got the case, we're going to have to get ready. Cool. Makes for a better fight.
After the break, we take it to the league. Michelle's predecessor, Billy Hunter, kicked up a lot of controversy by hiring family members on staff and keeping questionable financials. When Michelle took over, the players didn't trust it, nor did they trust her. How she earned back their confidence with time and due diligence. This is The Limits from NPR. I'm Jay Williams.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, BetterHelp. It's easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself too thin. Therapy can provide the tools and self-awareness to help you learn how to recharge, define your boundaries, and build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp Online Therapy. Fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Visit BetterHelp.com/NPR today to get 10% off your first month. This message comes from NPR sponsor Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy: family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC health/whatsyourwhy.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as the Black experience, you'll hear it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.
Michelle Roberts runs the union representing over 400 NBA players.
And formerly one of the nation's preeminent trial lawyers.
My past is littered with the bones of men who were foolish enough to think I was someone they could sleep on.
That's somebody you want representing you.
Without a doubt.
Here we go. Back to Michelle. Michelle, you started off as a lawyer, as a public defender focused on criminal justice. And can you tell us and provide some context with how you actually ended up in the NBA and basketball? It's quite the story, actually.
It's really ridiculous, because if I had planned it, it probably wouldn't have happened. I grew up in New York, in the South Bronx, in the projects, and I have two older brothers who, like just about every young black man growing up in the projects of the South Bronx, all they did was play basketball. The sound of a bouncing basketball was like the soundtrack of my childhood. That's all you heard day in and day out. And so I grew up naturally, I think, learning and loving basketball. I sort of bumped into the job. I was a trial lawyer. I tried cases before I left to become part of the NBPA. And I tried big cases. Trials would last for months at a time, mostly complex commercial cases representing Fortune 100 companies. And one case ended up settling, and I had a gap in my calendar, and I had a lot of time on my hands, and I had time to read the paper and read about my then predecessor having been fired.
Billy Hunter, right?
Billy Hunter had been fired by the Players. And I remember reading it and thinking, well, it'll take them 15 minutes to find a guy or a gal to take over that position, because it sounded like it was a really cool job. I wasn't even aware that there was a union for basketball players, to be candid with you, at that time. Mm-hmm. I just didn't know. So I thought I'd just inquire, and I inquired. And,
wow, you cold emailed the headhunter.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and said, what's the status? And he said, well, you know, we're hoping to get to some finalists. Are you seriously interested? And I said, well, I'm thinking about it. And he said, look, if you're really serious, you need to make a decision. This was on a Friday, I remember that. By Monday, because we really are closing out. And I remember thinking to myself, who does he think he's talking to by Monday? Look, dude, right? I'm a partner at a law firm. I'm making money. Don't tell me. I'm glad he gave me that sort of fixed period of time, because I spent the entire weekend literally saying,
wow,
you know, look, you're going to do this, because I knew it was going to take work to prepare for interviews. And frankly, the notion of being interviewed by the Players really excited me. I'm not going to lie. I'm a bit of a fan. So that Monday I called him. I said, let's go.
Wait, so tell me about the interviewing process. Who interviewed you? What was it like? What kind of questions were you asked?
You know, the good news is I respected the Players. I mean, it occurred to me that you can't, and you know this, Jay, you can't become a part of the NBA family unless you, it can't just simply be because you got skills on the court. You've got to be a very, very bright man or woman to get into, right? So I didn't underestimate the Players and think, I can ad lib a bunch of jocks asking questions. I actually prepared as I would for any job interview if I was trying to get a client, right? Did my due diligence. Ended up being interviewed initially by the members of the executive committee. At that time, it was Andre Iguodala, Steph Curry, Chris Paul. They wanted to know what my commitment was to the business, and they wanted to make sure I was not just a fan trying to get in the room.
Mm-hmm.
But it confirmed a respect I sort of knew I had for these men, because, and you know this, this is the livelihood. This is for whatever number of years they played. This is their revenue generating years, and they took very seriously. They take very seriously. I think that they were a little annoyed at themselves for not having kept a closer look at my predecessor, but they interviewed me as thoroughly as I've ever been interviewed in my professional life before. It was incredible. But now, when I say that now, I think to myself, you stupid idiot. And having worked with them for over 7 years, I now know this is exactly what they do. These aren't a bunch of jocks.
I need you to be honest with me, and I will only talk to you this way. What kind of shit did you walk into, Michelle? I mean, as a former player, and I'll say it for you, some of the things Billy Hunter was doing as it relates to mismanaging some of the revenue was blasphemy. How did you even begin to build trust between the head of the PA and the Players themselves?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's... Let me say this, because I want to be fair to Mr. Hunter. He didn't steal anything, all right? Well,
okay.
That's sort of a...
That's why I said mismanagement.
Right.
That's all,
right.
I said.
So, I mean, you know, there's some... I represented union officials in my old life who were stealing. I mean, they were stealing. Billy, you know, Billy's issues were not those. But I will say that I was shocked that given the amount of money that the Players do pour into the union, I was shocked at the services that were not being provided to players. I was absolutely shocked. And there was, frankly, there was barely any staff. But the trust thing didn't happen overnight. I mean, it did not happen overnight. And it should not have. It had to be earned. And what I would do was just stay as available, be in as many faces as I could. And people had, I would be chagrined if someone had a problem and they took it to the league as opposed to coming to us. We started this first call mantra. If you got a problem, call us first. Our only interest is in you and your welfare. We're not your agent. You know, we're not your team owner. We're not your coach. All we care about is you. So call us first. If we don't have the answer, we'll get it. And it took about, I remember not ever having a player call me and almost feeling as though I was bothering a player if I called. It took about 2 years before I had players call me. And by the time I left, I had a player call me. It would be odd for a player not to call me on any given day. It would be unusual if I didn't get a call from at least one player. So, but it was something that my staff worked very hard to earn, and that was the respect, number one, and then ultimately the trust of the players. We had work to do, and you know, thank you, Mr. Hunter, for making it not that easy.
You know what else wasn't easy? Figuring out how to get the NBA up and running again after the pandemic shut down all live sports. But Michelle acted on a crazy idea, the NBA bubble, where all 22, that's right, 22 teams would spend 3 months in one location. And it worked. It got the teams back on the court. The idea came from listening to the players. And Michelle listened to the players again when they began speaking out about how Black people were treated at the hands of police during the George Floyd protests. We're getting into all that and more after a quick break.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Betterment, an automated investing and savings app. CEO Sarah Levy shares Betterment's philosophy on investing.
No matter the amount of money you have, it's always good to be invested. It's always good to start early. It's always good to save. And the power of being consistent in your habits is really the path to long-term wealth.
Get started at Betterment.com. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. Support for NPR and the following message come from Betterment, an automated investing and savings app. CEO Sarah Levy shares why Betterment believes cash can be a strategic choice.
There are times when the market is volatile, when customers are a little nervous about investing. We came to understand that there was an opportunity to introduce cash as part of an investing strategy and to give back yields to the customer.
Learn more about high-yield cash accounts at Betterment.com. Investing involves risk. Performance not guaranteed. Cash reserve offered through Betterment LLC and Betterment Securities. Betterment is not a bank.
On NPR's Throughline.
We cannot function for 24 hours without cobalt because it's in our smartphone, our tablet, our laptop. And as a consequence, the lives of the people living in that part of the Congo descended into just a catastrophe.
Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Say her name. That's the mantra that swept the nation when Breonna Taylor was unjustly killed by police in 2020. It was even more powerful when the icons of the NBA made it their mission to say her name.
But I know we lost a beautiful woman in Breonna that has no say-so in what's going on right now. And we want justice no matter you know, how long it takes, even though it's been so many days.
It's always much bigger than a sport. It's almost much bigger than basketball. Because that could be anybody. That could be me. That could be any African American.
Michelle was listening. She listened to Breonna Taylor's mother when she led a call with her and dozens of NBA players. She listened to the players when they said they needed a way to speak out for Black rights. She encouraged and defended her players' rights to play safely through the pandemic. She listened. And so I wanted to listen to her tell me how I could be a better listener. Here's what she had to say. Take me through the steps of how you guys ultimately concluded on going to a bubble, how the deal got arranged with Disney. Mm-hmm. And then also,
You know, Michelle, I've always appreciated your candor. How did you get Black Lives Matter, the name, on the court during the bubble, during one of the times in the pandemic where millions and millions of eyeballs were on the product?
I got to tell you, I mean, the pandemic stalled my retirement by 2 years, right? Because I had only planned to keep the job for 4 years, and then I said, okay, 6 years, and then you know, Corona showed up and said, nah, you take a seat, right? And you know, it was an amazing, and you'll remember, this was an amazing time because you know we're all you know we. I didn't see it coming. And I remember when I shut the office down, telling my staff, okay, we're going to check in once a week to see when we can come back into the office. My office is still shut down. My people are still working remotely. So everybody, we shut down. And coincidentally, Jay, the day that we stopped playing, I had a meeting with Adam. I don't even know what we were meeting about anymore, but that he and I and his team and my team were meeting. And, you know, the virus was certainly accelerating. And this is one of the reasons why at the end of the day, I respect him. I remember thinking, okay, I'm going to need to tell him that the position I'm going to take, if any of our players end up testing positive, is that we have got to stop playing and figure out what the heck is going on. So I said to Adam, I said, you know, we've been lucky, knock on wood, but this thing is spreading like wildfire. You know, I got to say, Adam, we need to talk about stopping the games if players get sick. And he said, there's no question but that we will. And I remember thinking, okay, he said that came too easy, right? Sure enough, that night, Chris called me and said, you know, what's going on?
Chris Paul, right, Michelle?
Called me and said, you know, what's going on? I said, what are you talking about? He said, you know, we were out shooting around, getting ready to start the game, and they told us to go back to the locker room. What's going on? I said, I don't know. I'm still in this Uber. Let me call you when I get upstairs. It's almost at the same time, I get a call from Adam, says, you know, we got a positive. And that's when Rudy Gobert tested positive, and we're going to stop the games. And I said, okay, he wasn't BSing me because I wasn't sure. That, I mean, Adam, I respect him because you know I haven't caught him at least lying to me. But and yet at the same time, you know, this is a business, and the question was, can we safely resume play? When the bubble idea came into the conversation, I thought it was insane. I thought this is insane. How in the world are we gonna do this? Where are we going to do it? And then when the Disney property became an option, it began to suddenly seem to me to be doable. But then we had to sell it to the players. And as you can imagine, they were like, Michelle, what? You mean what? I said, look, dude, this is the deal. You all make the decision. But let me talk up to you about how much money you're not going to get paid if we can't finish this season.
Can you tell us what that is? Just because I don't feel like people had a true sense of how much could it be at stake.
So guys were going to see a substantial, certainly in excess of 60% of their contracts paid. We're not going to get paid. My view was it's on you. If you're prepared to lose that money, fine. And so, which made very clear that if there was an inability because of natural events to play, then you don't get paid. Just that simple. So then, but all of this was based on whether or not we could do it safely. And there was no vaccine. Remember, there was no vaccine at that time. We had to be in complete isolation. We had to test, and we had to remove people who tested positive if that occurred. And there was among the players, there was not a consistent yes or a consistent no. And part of it was, we need to be in these streets dealing with this police issue. And we can't do that if we're all isolated in a bubble in Disney. And suddenly players said, you know what? Why don't we use that bubble as a platform from which we can collectively keep this discussion going? And that idea grew among the players. Again, there were still some dissenters. And so the condition of play that was communicated to the league was, we're going to play basketball, but only if we can, without fear of retaliation, express how we feel about what's going on in the African-American communities and misconduct by some law enforcement officials. And not surprisingly, the leak said, how big do you want the logo to read that Black Lives Matter?
Mm.
And, you know, again, you got some fairly progressive team owners who themselves were very supportive of the movement. It was a lot less challenging than many people might think. And now, and football may have been a different issue. I don't know about football and maybe baseball, that sport. But basketball, I think historically, has been fairly progressive when it comes to civil rights issues and social justice issues. It's had its moments when their players who have been certainly punished for, you know, being more vocal than others. But in 2020, there was really very little pushback on this notion. And some will say it was because the owners wanted to make sure they got paid. They wanted the season to continue. I'm not mad at that idea. That could be true. So it was an opportunity to both fulfill their contractual obligations, you know, to be professional athletes and play and get paid for what they were getting paid to do, yet at the same time not abandon their social justice concerns, and frankly do it safely. You know, we didn't have, once we sort of cleared the first few weeks, we didn't have a single positive among players.
Wow, I mean, it was incredible to see the players feel that they were being heard. And I think that stood on both sides of the aisle, right? You had even guys like Jonathan Isaac who decided not to kneel, but had the right and the freedom to, but wasn't exiled or alienated from the group. So it still was done collectively together. Mm-hmm. It was such a polarizing time and still is because it was like you had to either be this or that, and people couldn't understand how complex of a subject matter it was. It wasn't something that was just black or white. There were nuances to it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, look, we have players who have law enforcement members in their family. Sterling Brown, who was assaulted by police, his dad is a police officer, right? Chris Paul, he has law enforcement. So if the issue wasn't we hate the police, the issue was, you know, why can't we get rid of these rascals that are just bad cops? We got to get rid. No one was talking. There are some players who believe in defunding the police, but that wasn't the majority of the clarion call. It was, we got to do something about people in the community being killed like this.
Michelle, that's really such a testament to you putting the players first. And as a former player myself, I have to tell you how invaluable that is. So I want to personally say thank you. And most importantly, go Duke.
I will not say go Duke, but I will say it's been a pleasure spending time with you. Anytime you need, just give me a call.
Likewise. A big thank you to Michelle and her team for making this happen. To hear more about activism in the NBA, stay tuned for this week's The Limits Plus episode, which drops on Thursday. Michelle looks to international issues in professional basketball, including the detainment of Brittany Griner. She also talks about why unions and organizing are essential to professional sports. Now, I always end the show by thanking the people who work their tails off to make all this happen. It's not easy. Today, I want to spend some time thanking someone who has been essential to our team. His name is Edward Wyckoff Williams, and he's worked tirelessly behind the scenes to shape not only this show, but countless more at NPR by booking the amazing guests you hear from week to week. This show and others at NPR could not have happened without him. We recently lost him, and our hearts go out to his family and to all of his friends during this difficult time. Not only was Edward incredible at his job, but that pales in comparison to the person he was, the bright light that he brought each and every day for everyone that knew him. This was a tremendous loss for our team, for NPR, and for the world, to be honest with you. I never got a chance to meet Edward in person, but every time I talked to him, he brought a smile to my face because he wanted to be the best at what he did. And I wanted to take a moment just to say thank you and to send my energy to his and his family, because I know this is a very difficult thing to do. It's difficult for me to even voice the words, but it's our job to live for Edward and continue to bring the energy, the spirit, and the light that he brought to our show and the people he was fortunate to be around each and every day. That's our responsibility. So to Edward and his family, I say this, rest in power, King. We will miss you, but we will continue to live your energy for the better every day. So from all of us here at The Limits, remember to keep it moving and stay positive, because that's what Edward would have wanted us to do.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Oracle Cloud Infrastructure. OCI is the platform for database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive at oracle.com/NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, the NPR Wine Club. Get the world of wine delivered to your door. When you join the NPR Wine Club, you'll receive the stories behind every bottle and favorite NPR shows and personalities arriving in liquid form, like Weekend Edition Cabernet and Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Zinfandel. The NPR Wine Club is a delicious way to support NPR's programming. If you're 21 or older, uncork a special offer at nprwineclub.org/podcast.
In this country, more than two local newspapers are closing down each week. As news deserts grow, public radio is a lifeline for staying informed. Keep that service strong with a donation to the NPR network at donate.npr.org. And thank you.